Most people have no idea how policy ideas actually become legislation. But inside NABIP, there's a group of volunteers taking real-world problems from employers and advisors and turning them into model legislation that could reshape healthcare transparency and plan stewardship across the country. Today, we're talking with two of the leaders helping drive that work forward. Let's get into it.
Welcome, and thank you for joining us for Healthcare Happy Hour, the official podcast of the National Association of Benefits and Insurance Professionals.
And I'm your host, David Saltzman. To help us understand all of this, we've invited Bianca Saul and Chris Vanderwolk from NABIP's Employer Working Group. Bianca helps lead the group's strategic direction and volunteer engagement efforts, and Chris has been deeply involved in the development of the group's model legislation initiatives. Together, they're helping bring member-driven policy ideas from conversation to action. Welcome, team. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Really happy to be here. Thanks, David.
You're quite welcome. It's our pleasure. So what is the Employer Working Group?
Just as you said, the Employer Working Group is a group of volunteers of NABIP members who join together to work on initiatives and using their collective knowledge, expertise, experience, just what they have to bring forth change.
You know, that's interesting. So how does it fit into our bigger advocacy and policy structure that a lot of members may be familiar with?
So the Employer Working Group is specifically focused on employer groups, what their interests are, what changes at the federal and state level that can help the employer coverage continue to be strong and really help their participants.
Why was there a need to create a group that was specifically focused on employers?
Well, we have to go back to probably ERISA, so the 1970s, when employers were really governed by this massive regulation and have been historically part of the U.S. way that healthcare has been provided in the U.S. for many employees and people. So it goes back before my time. Since ERISA, it has been a continuing, ERISA has broadened, not broadened, but the ACA extended this ERISA phenomena so that it is now a real thing that just has these tentacles with the employer base. And unless you dissolve ERISA and many other things, it's not going anywhere.
Yeah. And I think it's important to note too, the majority of Americans get their coverage through an employer plan. And so employers represent a healthy, generally, base of people to cover, because people who get up and go to work every day are usually in fairly passable shape. So they're a healthier group. They are the majority of people who are covered. And so their needs are different than maybe the individual market or the Medicare market, certainly the Medicaid market. So the needs of employers to maintain their coverage offering as a core part of employee compensation means that what they are focused on is different than what the Medicare working group might be working on or what the mental health working group could be working on. There's definitely overlaps, but the employer interest is different.
And now we have many other groups. So like the pharmacy group. So that's a really great point, Chris.
So one of the things that I find really interesting is that this isn't just a discussion group. The work's producing actual legislation and policy concepts. We'll talk about that in a little bit. What's the mission overall of the Employer Working Group and what problem is it trying to solve?
The mission is using the collective knowledge and experience that the group brings to the table by improving different choice, reducing burdens. So there are many burdens on employers in terms of reporting, disclosures, also sustaining the employer tax exclusion. That's a really important piece of what the working group focuses on, and also educating. So educating stakeholders at the federal level, at the state level, a lot of legislators do not have the knowledge that we have, but also neither do many of consumers of healthcare. So one of the main purposes of the working group is also to help educate at all levels.
The group has recently focused really heavily on transparency and plan stewardship. Why is that? Why was that a focus?
So every year, the working group starts, it's a July to June annual year for each new working group contingent. And every year, the working group gets to either address something that's happening currently, so current or proposed legislation and regulations, or they have an opportunity to identify one or a couple of projects that might positively impact employer groups, employer-sponsored health plans, the employer experience. And as a collective, we just take all of that information and decide one or two major projects that we're going to work on in the year. And last year and this year, I'm happy to say that these state model legislation initiatives were really brought forth by Chris and championed by the group in the last couple of years.
One of the things that NABIP members always ask is, you know, how can I get involved? So who's on the committee, the employer working group this year, and how can members who are interested in participating going forward, how can they participate?
So let me split that up. This year, we have members Charles Rosen, Paul Roberts, Alexis Bruni, Michael Dillon, Chris V, who's here with me, Devin Travis, Carla Heath, Kathy Doherty, Marcy Strauss, James Knox, Shannon Enders, and Sarah Simpkins. Those are all the members this year that have worked together. So how the group gets formed is annually. We just closed last month. Annually around this time of year, NABIB puts out a call for volunteers, and members from all over the United States have the opportunity to apply and raise their hand to volunteer. You don't need to have any experience necessarily. You just have to have a strong desire and passion for making change, whether that is at NABIB national or regional level.
And we want you to be somebody who's engaged locally too. So if you did apply and you didn't get selected for one of the national groups, we definitely want to engage you locally at your state level, your chapter level, and continue to work with you, help you grow your chops as you move your way up. And that's really what we look for, is people on the national level who've been involved at the local level, so that we know that they speak with NABIB's voice, that they are putting our association's interests ahead of maybe their own, and that they're willing and able to do the work that it takes to be on these groups.
Yeah, the local and state chapters, Chris, have always been a really good proving ground for finding new leaders and helping to nurture them and bring them to the fore. So if you have an interest, there's loads of ways to get involved. And, you know, if you're not sure, talk to Chris or Bianca. Even if the national group is not open right now, there are other places where we desperately need folks who are willing to dig in and help make this happen, because there are state legislatures who, as you well know, or who are involved with an awful lot of the gobbledygook that, you know, we've all got to deal with too. So sometimes that's as important a position as the national positions, depending on the issue. How do issues and ideas actually make their way into the working group?
So the way I did it this year is I literally asked everyone. I just said, okay, you're all on this working group. What are you seeing? What do you want to work on? Let's combine all of that information. And we discussed each one. And then we chose our top three and said, okay, let's work on this year. Now, in prior years, because I've been in the working group for a few years, in prior years, it has also come from NABIB saying, hey, you know, there's this proposed legislation or this thing that's happening. NABIB really wants to have a voice. Can the working group work on this? We've also this year collaborated with the Medicare group, updating some of their infographic pieces. So we did the HR Medicare piece earlier in the year, and we were able to work on that. So it comes from several avenues, and we just incorporate and prioritize throughout the year.
Conversations at events like CapCon and the annual convention sometimes turn into actual initiatives.
Absolutely. The first initiative that the working group worked on at the state level, this model template, started with a conversation with Chris and I at CapCon 2 years ago. He pulled me aside and said, hey, Bianca, I hear you're on the working group. There's this model legislation in Texas that does X. And I said, absolutely. That sounds like the exact thing that the working group should be working on. Why hasn't this already been shared? Why isn't this more common? So it was exciting to have Chris join the working group and proceed through that, get everyone else excited as well.
Once an idea surfaces, how does the group decide what to pursue? Is it just majority vote, or do you try to weight stuff or talk it through? What's the process like?
Well, we definitely spend some time talking. The conversations, sometimes you think they're, you know, they just go because they grow tentacles and go in different directions. But I really have seen my job this past year as bringing the focus back to what the core is and just saying, okay, so we've heard all these different pieces, all these different opinions, and just gathering a consensus with, okay, are we moving forward? And also making sure that NABIB is aware of what we've chosen to work on and that they're also in the know so that it's a full picture of all of us working together, because we're not a siloed working group that is just on our own trying to move forward things that don't make sense.
And that whole process, as we move forward here, that whole process this year has got the group working on two really significant model bills. Tell us about what you're working on and why they're important.
Yeah, first, I just want to say Bianca has done an exceptional job of leading this group. She does a great job of identifying what the next steps are, and that's how we got to where we are. So big kudos to Bianca for her leadership in the employer working group. We've worked on two bills, really, for this year. One is called the Credit Act, and the other is called the ELARA Act. And both of them actually originate out of some bills that were passed in Texas that we discussed and worked on and put our own flavor on and tried to learn from some of the things that they experienced down there to make it better. We approach both as state-level regulations, so they would only apply to fully insured plans in those states because that's what states can regulate. And the reason we chose state-based action was because we looked at the slim probability of getting anything done at the federal level and thought we could make a better change at the local level than trying to focus our efforts on the federal level. Both of these could certainly become federal laws if somebody is so inclined and connected to make them happen. That would be an outstanding outcome. But we were trying to be pragmatic about what we could do. So the first one, the Credit Act, that stands for Consumer Recognition for Eligible Direct Insurance Transactions. And there's a Texas law that's been on the book for a couple of years now. And what it does is it really just does a common sense thing. And it gives members, and this could apply outside of just the employer working group, this could apply to individual coverage as well. And ERISA plans could do this today already. They could set this up if their plan, if they're self-funded and their TPA will administer it. What it does is it gives the consumer cost-sharing credit, deductible credit, if they acquire their healthcare at a lower price in cash than they would get on average in their network. And so what does that look like? How does that work? That seems really complicated, and for a lot of people it is. If we think about drug costs, which we know is a huge and growing expense, let's think about Humira. It's the blockbuster drug. It's one of the most expensive, runs between $7,000 and $9,000 a month. There's a biosimilar for it. It's a biologic drug, so they're not generics, they're biosimilars. There's a biosimilar for it called Yusimry. And Yusimry runs about $1,000 a month on GoodRx and about $600 a month on Mark Cuban cost plus drugs. And I'm using those because those are marketplaces that most people are familiar with. And so if we think about the average person, they've got a deductible of about $2,000. So when they go to the pharmacy, they could pay $2,000 that first month they get a prescription for Humira and have to come out of pocket for it. But then they've hit their deductible. Or they could go buy Yusimry for $500, $600 out of pocket from Mark Cuban, and they would save the plan quite a bit. They would save themselves $1,500 their first month, more or less. They would save the plan $8,500 that first month. And that would stack up every month. Over the course of the year, you're looking at $100,000 for brand name Humira. You're looking at about $7,000 for Yusimry. But Yusimry didn't get any traction because in order to go buy that, you wouldn't get cost sharing credit. And the plans have typically incentivized, the formularies have incentivized a high rebate structure. So they like a high list cost because they can get a big rebate. And so the formularies didn't jump on bringing in Yusimry. And so employers are paying $100,000 a year for a drug that in many cases, the biosimilar would work for the cost of 1 month's dose for the whole year. Our bill would say you should get credit for the $500 or $600 a month towards your deductible. Another place to think about if you're not on a drug like that is imaging. Imaging is a very standard thing. It's done. There's only a couple of people that manufacture MRI machines around the world. You're getting the same picture in all likelihood, regardless of where you go. Just like if you get Yusimry, you're getting the same Yusimry from any licensed pharmacist in the United States. So if you look at price variance in imaging, a lot of the friction that people have in imaging is when you go to the doctor and you say, hey, my knee hurts or my back hurts. They want to give you an MRI to see what's going on in the soft tissue. Your insurance company will say, cool, you've got to do 8 weeks of PT before we're going to pay for that. And the reason for doing that is because the price variance on MRI is huge. I went on and looked in my personal plan before we came on here, and the price variance for me within a reasonable zip code range of my house was $402 total cost, of which I would have paid the whole thing, to $4,700, of which I would have paid $900 on my plan. And the picture that I got for $4,700 wouldn't be 15 times better than the picture that I got for $400. It would be the same picture, and it would have to be read by my doctor the same way. And so when we look at what the imaging costs are, if we can streamline some of that friction, you can buy imaging cash at any place. They'll take money. Believe it or not, doctors do take money, and imaging centers do take money. And so if you say, what's the cost cash? And they say it's $350, and you look and your best negotiated price is $402, your average negotiated price is $1,000, pay the $400, pay the $300, pay that lower price. And that way you're going to get the care. You're less likely to not get care, which is a huge problem. There's a challenge with expensive prescription drugs that people don't pick them up when they find out how much they cost. We don't want to have plans where we're paying an average of $27,000, $28,000 a year for a family to get coverage. And the design is that when they actually need it, it's too expensive for them to get it. So this would just give credit for it. It doesn't require insurers to pay any of the claims. It's just if a member says, I can do better out of pocket by buying it from GoodRx, Mark Cuban Cost Plus Drug, my local pharmacy, then the average in-network price, I should get credit for that good decision. Same thing for MRIs, for really anything. And so we're right now, we're introducing that with some legislators in New Jersey, and we hope to have some good news on that over the rest of the course of the year. The other bill that we're working on is really meant to fix a gap in current transparency rules. So if you open up LinkedIn on any given day, if you open up the New York Times, you're going to see something about fiduciary duties these days. Employers have obligations to do the right thing, to be prudent experts for their participants. We've got machine-readable files that, in theory, disclose the prices for everybody, but they are terabytes of data and no real person actually has the ability to digest them. Employers should have access to their claims data. We're talking about a group benefits plans. This is where we talked about employers being different than the individual market, the Medicare market. The health benefits budget is usually the second biggest line item after payroll for most employers that are in human capital intensive industries. And they're sending that money out every month without having any idea what it's for. We've all worked for companies. We've all had to do expense reports. If I just sent in an expense report that said my budget, I spent $10,000 this month, and they said, what was it for? I was like, work stuff. They wouldn't pay that. And employers do that every day on health benefits. So what we want to do is we want to give them the affirmative right to their claims data. And there's an obligation right now that you can't have any gag clauses in your contract. But the flip side of that is that the service providers just say, well, it's proprietary data. We're not going to give you that, or we don't have to give you that. There's no gag clause. We're just not going to give it to you. So we want to give employers an affirmative right to their claims data. And this actually stems out of a relatively older law in Texas from 2007, that employers in their insured market have had the right to their claims data for coming up on 20 years. And believe it or not, cats and dogs are living together and the market hasn't collapsed. So we took some of that, and then we took the claims data file from the 32BJ model administrator contract, put those together and said, hey, let's make sure we can give people an affirmative right to their claims data. Just give them a detailed invoice. And so that's the other bill we've put together. And what's coming next is we really want champion. So if you're listening to this podcast and this sounds interesting to you, particularly if you happen to know anybody in your state assembly or your state senate, in your governor's mansion, we want you to be able to make those connections. This is where we go beyond the national working group entirely. We can't do all this in the national working group. We try to come up with good ideas, have robust debates and conversations, but we certainly don't know everybody in every state government. And if you do, if you're coming to Atlantic City, come see Bianca or me, and we'll be happy to talk to you about this all weekend.
I will have to say, David, you brought up a good point about CapCon. At the last CapCon, Chris, don't you remember there was a person that came up to the mic and spoke exactly about the Credit Act? And I remember you walking to me and saying, Bianca, this is what we're working on. I said, I know.
Yeah, if that person's listening to this podcast, find us. So we were trying to figure out who you were afterwards. I couldn't find you.
So will you guys also help, or will the NABIP Ledge staff help members who've maybe never done this before, but who do have some relationships with their state legislatures or the state house? Will you help them learn kind of how to do this, how to approach this, so it doesn't seem really weird and foreign and they have a better likelihood of success?
Yeah, absolutely. And even if they don't necessarily have the legislative experience, somebody in their state probably does as well that they can partner with. Each state usually has a legislative committee. Each region definitely does. And then we on the national level are certainly happy to engage as much as you'd like. And some of our success last year was Devin Travis in Virginia got some language that we wrote in the prescription drug working group into law in Virginia. She was a member of the national committee, but also a local member, worked with her lobbyist. So if you have a relationship, if your kid plays soccer with a state legislator who cares about our issues, that is way more powerful than knowing how a bill becomes a law. We'd be happy to be the schoolhouse rock for you.
And I will say the employer working group did create toolkits for each of these bills so that they wouldn't be stand alone. So the employer working group created toolkits. Now in the last, or NABIB sent it out on Friday, the prettied up version of the bills are out in everyone, easily accessible to everyone. But the employer working group did create some toolkits to assist anyone who's interested in bringing it forth to their local legislators.
Where are those toolkits available, Bianca? How can somebody grab onto one if they want?
That is with NABIB. What's the NABIB Ledge email? It's
legislative@nabib.org.
Legislative@nabib.org. Thank you, Chris.
Yeah, sure, they'll get them to you and they'll get them right out. So let's close out by looking ahead. As you look ahead, maybe over the next year, what do you expect from the employer working group and what issues do you think may be bubbling up next?
Well, I think Bianca mentioned in the beginning of this, but the tax exclusion for employer benefit plans is certainly going to be on the radar. It pops up every year or so with some pretty regular effect, because it's a big spot in the budget. Usually it takes a fair amount of education for Congress to understand that it's not the best place to cut, because getting rid of it would actually make care more expensive. The tax exclusion that employers get is a very economically efficient way of delivering healthcare to the majority of Americans. So that will probably pop up again. We are facing likely another big round of renewals. This past year for January 2026 was a big one. So for January 2027, we expect to be another challenging season. And so there will be ultimately, I think, more transparency push, more clarity, probably some push for some real cost savings, whether that be, I think people have learned you can't shift to employees and have the costs actually go down. So we'll be looking at all those things as they pop up. But it's going to be another challenging year for employers in all likelihood. And so we'll be looking at good ideas, bad ideas, everything, trying to figure out what makes it through and what we can do to help people.
This is exactly the kind of behind the scenes work that most members never see, but it's member driven. I think that's what's really, really important. It's where these ideas also become action. Bianca, Chris, thanks for joining us and for helping explain how the employer working group is helping shape real policy solutions for employers and consumers alike.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You can have the Healthcare Happy Hour podcast downloaded automatically by subscribing on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can also find a link to the podcast in the member exclusive Washington Update published on Fridays. For more information on our government affairs efforts or to become a member, visit nabip.org.